of you out there in Radioland. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked onto our website, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington, so very special. Our Town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, from bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. So much has changed in the world the past couple of years thanks to the pandemic, but some things remain the same. Jefferson County still teems with deer, otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. But like the rest of the globe, Jefferson County and everyone living here faces the gritty reality of 2021. The mission of Our Town is to introduce you to some of the fascinating people who make up the complex fabric of this community. Listening to Our Town will let you meet some of the vibrant and complex characters who help give this community its unique personality. Our Town is a window on the people of Jefferson County, Washington. My guest today is Chief Thomas Olson, who took over as Port Townsend Police Chief in May 2021. You've probably heard his name, but this might be the first opportunity to get to know a little bit about the man behind the badge. So welcome to the show, Chief Olson, and welcome to Port Townsend.
Thank you very much for having me.
I usually start my show the same way, by asking my guest if they were born and grew up on the Olympic Peninsula. But I guess I sort of let the cat out of the bag and by welcoming you to Port Townsend. So tell me, where are you from?
Well, I grew up in northern Minnesota.
Big population there?
A town of 332 population. It's called Nevis. It's kind of right in the middle of the state, right between Fargo-Moorhead and Duluth. And we were a tourist destination with all the Great Lakes, fishing in the summer, hunting, and snowmobiling in the winter.
Okay. You told me your high school only had a graduating class of, what, 27, did you say?
29.
29. Yep. Wow. Okay. So what did you do when you got out of high school? Did you have plans? Did you have it all mapped out what you would do with your life?
Well, not necessarily, but I had a good friend that had graduated the year before me and had went back to Alaska. He had spent some time there as a kid. His dad worked on the North Slope, and he was up there the summer before and kind of asked me if I'd be interested in joining him. So he ended up coming back, and his brother was in my graduating class. So 6 days after I graduated high school in 1984, Jim and Chad and myself packed up our cars and drove the Alcan Highway up to Fairbanks, Alaska.
That must have been a great adventure. Do you remember any particular highlight of what happened?
I had a Triumph TR7 as my car in high school, and I was driving that on the Alcan Highway, which is full of potholes, and that didn't end up real well. And I think it was still in Canada, but really close to the Alaskan border, it broke down on us. And so we had to store it at a maintenance shop there and drive another, gosh, I think 10 hours or so to Fairbanks. And then about 2 weeks later, we got the part and went back.
It survived the trip, though.
It did. It made it all the way to Fairbanks. Yep.
Okay. And when that adventure was over, what did you do next?
Well, I spent the summer working construction and working long hours and just having a good time there. We went to Hawaii for about 10 days to celebrate all of our work all summer. And I went home to Minnesota for a couple weeks. And about September 14th or so, I entered the United States Air Force.
Okay. And where did you go for your basic training?
I spent the next 6 weeks in basic training in San Antonio, Texas. Was selected to be in the security forces, or kind of the police side of the Air Force. And the tech school for that was also in San Antonio, Texas. So I spent another 6 weeks there before going to my first assignment, which was Grand Forks Air Force Base, North Dakota.
So was joining the security force side of things a plan of yours, or how did you get into that?
No, it was not at all a plan. Okay. I really had this vision of being an air traffic controller. But in order to be an air traffic controller, you had to go through a bunch of testing while down in basic training to check your vision, your color blindness, your depth perception. And I got into basic training and I got so focused on just getting through basic training that I decided not to even go test, and I just was going to accept whatever the Air Force chose for me. And that was security police.
Okay. And your first assignment, then, what did you do?
I worked in the missile fields in North Dakota as what we called an ART patrol, active response team. So anytime an alarm would go off on one of the missile sites, we would respond out there and secure the site.
And how long did you end up staying that?
I was there about a year before I got my first assignment to go overseas, which is really fortunate because most people, when they get into the Strategic Air Command, as it's known, or SAC, you never get out because they needed so much in the way of the nuclear missiles and nuclear B-52s that they also had on the base. And so I was very fortunate.
And where did you go overseas?
My assignment was to, at the time it was called Camp New Amsterdam in the Netherlands, just outside of Utrecht and about 30 to 45 minutes outside of Amsterdam.
And what did you do there?
I was also a security police. I did some patrols within the alert areas where they stored the planes. And we had F-15 fighters there. We were kind of the northern defense for Europe over the North Sea. So at that time in the mid-80s, it was during the Cold War, and Russia would fly the Big Bear aircraft and other aircraft down around the northern area of Europe. So we were the launch F-15s, fighters that would take off and go defend the northern part of Europe.
Did you ever get to go on one of the F-15s?
I did. I was fortunate enough. I was Airman of the Year for the security police for 2 years in a row, and one of my prizes was to go on a incentive flight in an F-15. So I was fortunate enough to not just get a flight, but I got a flight on an active training mission where we escorted some British Harriers from Holland down to the East German border and back.
That must have been pretty thrilling.
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Mm-hmm. Wow. And how long were you in the Netherlands?
I was there for almost 3 years to the end of my enlistment. Back then, the military was cutting back on its numbers, so I got caught up in the first rollback in late 87, and they basically said, hey, we need you to re-enlist for 4 more years, or we're going to separate you. And so I chose to get out.
And what did you do then?
Well, I didn't have a lot of plans, so I went back to Minneapolis and stayed with my sister, and she got me a job at a gym where I was a fitness instructor at a fitness center in Minneapolis. And I did that along with some armed security work in the Minneapolis area until I got hired by the Washington State Patrol.
And why Washington State versus any one of the others?
Well, I really had a desire to be a Minnesota State Trooper, but unfortunately they had just started a class. And they also required a 2-year certification or a college degree. And although I was going to school while I was in the military, it was, you know, class here, class there, whatever I could do along with my job. Didn't have the credits that I needed, so it was going to take me about 18 months to get in to the Minnesota Highway Patrol. I had some friends out here in Washington, and they invited me out to stay with them. I was able to get in and test, and like 4 days later, they told me that they were going to hire me in a month. So it went really quick. They were in need of new recruits. So.
And how long of a training did you have to do to be out in a car?
I was a cadet for about 3.5 months. So I was working out of Bellevue, the pass up North Bend, and did that for about 3.5 months before going to the academy. The academy was about 5 months long. I did all my training. I did my coaching trip, if you will, up in Bellingham. So I spent about 6 weeks on the road working in the Bellingham area before I graduated the academy, and I was assigned to East Tacoma.
Okay, and that's a pretty huge beat, right?
Yeah, East Tacoma basically is all, at that time in 1989 when I got there, We had all the county roads and the state routes and everything. Tacoma was split kind of in two. You had the freeway and the east side. So if you worked the freeway, you basically worked I-5 and a couple of state routes in the Fife area and Tacoma area, Highway 16. But East Tacoma went all the way from Tacoma 5, I-5 corridor in Tacoma to Buckley and all the way down to the park entrance of Mount Rainier.
So you're a state trooper. What sort of crimes do you cover? I mean, it must be a pretty broad spectrum.
Our overall focus was traffic law enforcement. But if you can imagine, about every crime that occurs has some sort of transportation attached to it, whether it's a getaway car or whatever. So we were actively involved in just about everything. And anything coming out of Tacoma or any of the other cities, Puyallup, some of the smaller cities, all the way out to Eatonville and Buckley, we were actively involved with all of that. And we were also a support agency, so we assisted some of those smaller agencies with different investigations that they had as well. So
how long did you end up being a Washington State Trooper?
I was with the Washington State Patrol for a little over 25 and a half years, and I was a trooper for 11 years, and I was a sergeant for 14 years. Most of my time was spent in Tacoma, about 21 years, and I spent about 4 years in Seattle. So I worked South Seattle for a couple years, and I worked North Seattle, which was at the end of my career, for about a year and a half, or almost 2 years.
A sergeant obviously has more responsibility than a trooper.
I was field supervision for up to 9 troopers, and was responsible for large areas such as East Tacoma, the South Freeway in Tacoma, or in Seattle, and the North Freeway in Seattle. Okay. And so when I was working, or when my people were working, I oversee and supervised any crime scenes or anything that occurred.
Okay. So you told me you were with the Washington State Police for 25 years. What prompted you to end that part of your career?
One of the reasons that I came to the Washington State Patrol, and one of the huge benefits of that is the Washington State Patrol has a 25-year retirement. So after 25 years, we're eligible to retire and collect those retirement benefits immediately. And so after my 25 years, I was 48 years old because I hired on at 23. I was young. I knew that I wasn't going to fully retire, and I've gotten remarried, and I have two pretty young kids. My daughter's 11 and my son is 13. So I knew I was going to have to work, and it just didn't make sense for me to stay with the Washington State Patrol, knowing that 60% of that income I was going to get whether I showed up or not. So I started looking for other opportunities, and I knew I was going to do that in my last 5 years. So I went back to school and I got my bachelor's degree, and I followed that up and I got my master's degree in organizational leadership because I knew that I wanted to advance my career and get up into management.
And did you also go to the FBI Academy?
I did that after I left the State Patrol, and I got hired by the University of Washington Police Department as a lieutenant there about 3 years before I was selected to get into a director's role, which is equivalent of a deputy chief. And then shortly after that, I was fully promoted to deputy chief with the University of Washington Police Department. And I attended the FBI Academy while I was there in 2019.
Okay. So just to recap that, so you were 25 years with the Washington State Police. You then completed your education, which you didn't have time to do when you were 21 or whatever, and got a bachelor's and a master's and a couple of associate degrees, I believe. And then you worked for UW with their police force. So these are two different, you know, realms within classic police work. Can you sort of just sum up what you see as the difference between those two jobs?
I learned that real quick when I went to the University of Washington that, you know, some of the priorities there were not priorities at the State Patrol, and kind of vice versa. What was important wasn't important, and what wasn't important was important. So it was like it.
Can you use an example so we could understand that better?
Like traffic related things were pretty important at the State Patrol. We had goals to reduce traffic fatalities, injuries, seatbelts. And to be honest with you, traffic is not really a major issue on the campus because most of the roadways run in circles or out around the campus. Our primary responsibilities were on campus. So most of the vehicles are moving pretty slow because we have pedestrians all over the place.
Right.
So with the State Patrol, bike type enforcement wasn't an issue for us. We're on campus. Speeding bikes running, going in and out of roadways and up on sidewalks became more of a priority. And then also another big change was the community policing aspect of working with your community to, you know, make your community more safe. And so that was big on campus, where it, not that it wasn't important in the State Patrol, we just did a different type of policing in such large areas that it was, right, it was really a challenge to break that down into smaller communities because we were responsible for such large areas.
So you worked much more directly with the community, whether it was the students or the faculty or whoever, and you had to listen to what they had to say.
Yeah, we worked very closely with student groups and organizations, as well as staff and faculty. We had 50 sororities and fraternities, so we worked closely with their leadership and how we could improve the safety and what goes on in that those areas, along with housing. We had officers that were directly assigned to our housing, so we worked with their leadership on how we could improve that process and working with them and how we could improve property crimes, computers getting stolen, bikes getting stolen, and how we can register and get that message out to our community. Because what people don't really think about in campuses and campus policing is every 4 years you have a completely new set of residents, if you will, right, in your community. It's transient because
turnover.
Turnover of students is, you know, we have about 40,000 students there. So about 10,000 students would leave and about 10,000 students would come. So every year we had to start over when it comes to education and teaching them how to not be victims of crimes. And
right. Well, almost all campuses at almost any point in time have demonstrations. And, you know, there are demonstrations currently going on. There were during your time. And so tell me how you and your guys, male and female, would cope with such things, because they obviously happened when you were there.
Yeah, so we, knowing you're a campus and you're a focal point, and many of the groups that wanted to have rallies or protests knew that there was a built-in audience for that, really brought them to the campus, whether they were affiliated with university or not. Anybody can come there and give their message when they're outside in a public space. So the biggest thing we did was we learned how to prepare and collect intelligence information through open source internet and just really get to know who's coming, what their issues are, who might have an issue with their issue, and just plan accordingly. And so we got very good at that. And it's just a planning process. And when I got here, because we have so many community events, not necessarily protests or rallies, but anytime you have an event that brings a large group of people together, you have to plan for numerous things that could potentially occur. So,
okay, well, you're leading into my next question. How did you end up here in Port Townsend as police chief?
Oh, well... To be honest with you, you know, just working at the university as a deputy chief, I felt, you know, the next step in my career was to be a chief someday. So I was looking for opportunities. I didn't necessarily just pick Port Townsend. I think it kind of picked me. I had been in the area about a year earlier, and my wife and kids were with me, and we got the opportunity to come down and spend some time downtown, like every other person. I've been in the state for nearly, well, over 30 years, and I heard a lot about Port Townsend, and I never actually got here. And when we did, we just thought it was just a great place, and we were going to come back, and we went to the Rose Theater and really enjoyed that. And so when I saw the advertisement for chief of police, I immediately asked my wife, you know, what do you think? And because it would require a big move, and right. our kids were in middle school and getting close to high school, so we really had a big decision to make. We drove out here as a family. We drove around town. We saw the deer and, you know, everything that everybody else sees when they come to Port Townsend. And we said, yeah, this would be a place that we would really enjoy being and raising our kids. So I entered the process with that in mind. And for whatever reason, I look back and I'm not quite sure why, but I really put so much more effort into the process than I had any other process. And I had been a finalist in a couple other cities for the chief position, but I never put in the work that I did in this.
You talked to a lot of people before you became chief.
Yeah, I was here 4 different times and interviewed over 30 people in that process, and just really trying to get a feel for the community, the challenges within the community that I might need to address, or what was the concerns, and just really researched that and looked at ways and how I could make improvements if I were fortunate enough to be selected.
Okay, and now that you are chief, what do you see as your priorities?
Well, you know, my priorities have changed a little bit just because of the necessity. And my top priority right now is my staffing. Since I got here, I've lost 2 officers, which puts us down 4 officers total. And at the end of this year, I have an officer that's getting ready to retire. So right now, my officers are putting in a lot of overtime, mandatory overtime, and you can only sustain that for so long. And there's been staffing issues in the police department here for well before I got here. And so all the other things that I want to do are kind of on hold right now until we can get staffing up, because a lot of the programs and things that I want to do moving forward require the assistance of my officers as additional duties, whether it's overseeing a reserve program or a volunteer program, or a Citizens Academy, which are all things that I think would be great for this community. I just can't do it all myself, and I can't ask my officers to work 60 hours a week and then take on additional duties as well. So my highest priority right now is getting my department as close to fully staffed as possible and retain people, keep people here.
Right. Now, we are running short on time. I'd like you, I know, realize you've got to hire people first, but what are some of the community-related programs that you'd like to see?
First thing I want to do is work on a strategic plan, and that'll really lay out a plan for the police department when it comes to the community policing initiatives. It gives us a way to look at our successes, things where we need to improve upon. So for us to be successful, we need to have that plan. So that's going to be important. A Citizens Advisory Council, I think, will be important, where we get a group of leaders throughout the community that will meet with me on a fairly regular basis to talk about concerns that have come to him, and whether I can have an impact on that, or we can change things, or if I have policies or procedures or things that I want to do that have a direct impact on the community, I'm going to bring it to that group and we're going to talk about it and make sure that I'm on the right page and get that citizen feedback. One of the things I'm doing right now is on my hiring boards, I always have members of the community as part of that process, because I want to hear their input when it comes to hiring our new officers.
That's good. Anything else top of mind?
I would also like to sectorize the city and put the city into like 4 sectors and assign officers to those sectors. So those officers, any issues that are happening within those areas, that you'll have a specific officer that will address those. They will be familiar with everything going on there. Even if they're not working, they'll find out about those things, and they can relate other things to other things. And they will also have localized meetings to talk about safety within those neighborhoods.
They will be, you know, a face or a resource to people in a particular region.
Absolutely. And I think it's important that people know not only the officer by face, but by name. They should be able to call the officers in their sector by their first name. They should know them by their first name.
Good. Okay. We're really getting short on time. You've got a minute or so just to say anything in conclusion that you want to.
I'm doing everything I can as quickly as I possible to meet the community concerns, but I will continue to work. And once we get our staffing up, I think we're really going to hit the ground running.
Okay. So. Well, welcome to the community. I think I speak on behalf of all of us. We're delighted to have you here. And I hope that citizens can feel free to call on you and other members of the police department if they have any issues they want to discuss. I think we're moving forward. So thank you so much for being on the show. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Maryam McNellis. My guest today has been Port Townsend's Chief of Police, Thomas Olson. In addition to thanking Chief Olson for being a guest on the show, I want to thank Sunny Flores, editor and producer of Our Town. Sunny will make sure we sound terrific and edit out a few of our mumbles and grumbles. I also want to thank you, the listener, for sticking with us during the pandemic. We're all limping through this together. We're nearing the end, I hope. So I just think things are opening up a little bit. I actually personally went to a movie recently, and Rocky Friedman has reopened The Rose. Popcorn's as good as ever. So keep listening to KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. We're your community radio station by and for the people of Jefferson County. We need more volunteers. We need to stay afloat. All of us at KPTZ would really like to return to some form of normal. So listener, stay safe, stay healthy. The show's called Our Town. I'm your host, Maryam McNellis, signing off for today. But please keep listening to KPTZ for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Maryam McNellis and edited by Sunny Flores.